got county fairs and rodeos. Ain't a better place for my kids to grow.
Good morning, y'all.
Turn them loose in the western summertime. And if you ever held your woman on a summer's evening,
yeah,
while the prairie moon was blazing in her eyes,
how about that?
Then you know why.
We had that moon last night, didn't we?
We did.
Woo!
These western skies.
Western skies. Man, oh man. I have a daughter in Minneapolis, was raised south of Mason-Dixon, right off the Gulf Coast in Louisiana, but man, I love my western skies.
You bet.
Jim Paxson, Special Assistant to the Director of the Arizona Game and Fish Department, joining us this morning talking about everything outdoors in the great state of Arizona. Thank you for tuning in to Rosie on the House. I'm Rosie. I'm here with my wife, sweet Jennifer.
Good
morning.
Morning,
darling. Romy is on the phone line. If you'd like to call and talk to Jim or I or recommend a favorite, nobody ever calls and recommends their favorite camping spot.
Or hunting spot.
Or
maybe we could work on fishing. Huh?
Maybe fishing. Man, I was out on Bartlett Lake Thursday night, and that full moon came over those yellow cliffs just across from the Bartlett Flats. Man, that was a special night.
I'm gonna post the picture of him and his fish. That's the biggest smile I've seen out of you in a long time. And I think it's because it's probably the first time you've caught fish in Arizona, right?
We had a good night. First time I caught like that. This is the biggest catfish I've ever caught in my life. And then a nice little assortment of 1.5 and 2 pound bass.
Jennifer, his email waxed poetic, didn't it? I could tell he was really enjoying himself.
Oh, he did that. Very much.
If y'all want to talk outdoors Arizona, Jim Paxson is here. We've got a full itinerary of things we'd like to talk about. Jim, y'all are super, super busy. Like, is this like you're cramming all this busyness into like your last 4 weeks at the agency?
Oh, now don't rush it, Rosie. It's six.
It's 6 weeks.
There's plenty to do. That Director Voiles, he keeps thinking that he needs to add to my list. So
I bet he does. I bet he's counting.
And Jim's
the hours.
Already checked out for the summer. He says he's not doing another summer here. So he needs to get it done before then so you don't get stuck here.
That's right. We'll be traveling in that RV in the high country in the summer.
Oh, man. It sounds beautiful. Wouldn't it be nice just to have that little ranch already set aside with your name on it that you know is just waiting for you to pull through the front gate?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Listen, we have some tremendous game and fish successes to talk about. Let's go down to the southeast corner of the state and talk a little bit about what y'all are doing down there.
You know, we don't do anything without the help of volunteers, Rosie, and we've been working for 3 years now down in that Elgin-Sonoyta area to help our antelope. We really had a declining situation. We got down to just a few antelope in that country, and we began to assess and found that mesquite's one of our biggest problems. Mesquite robs water from the soil and impedes grass growing around it, and it also allows some stalking cover for coyotes to get up close when they're fawning and dropping the little ones on the ground. And we had a fence problem. You know, an antelope won't go over a fence, they go under. But if a barbed wire is down close to the ground, 6-8 inches, it's impenetrable. The antelope can't get through. So with our volunteers, we've been working sections of fence, and they take the bottom wire off and take the second wire and replace it with a smooth wire, and it's 16 inches off the ground, and it'll keep calves in, but the antelope can go through.
This is one of the fastest land animals on the planet, and it won't jump a 3-foot fence.
You know, I've actually seen them jump, but it's very rare.
They don't like to.
They'll be 30, 40 there, and most of them will go under, and two or three will jump, but they are really pressed and stressed when they go over a fence.
Now, when you see them being pressed through a fence, it's amazing how fast they can go on. It's like sliding in at home plate, and then they're back up on their feet, and they're off and away. It's really pretty incredible feat to watch.
They are an amazing animal.
Man. So we are ripping out mesquites. Now, someone over in Sulphur Springs Valley has torn out thousands of acres of mesquite. There's piles of mesquite trees that are 2 stories tall and 1/2 mile long. I don't know what they're going to do with all that mesquite wood.
Well, at the right time, they'll probably burn them if it's not salvaged for firewood. You know, that makes mighty, mighty good barbecue and stuff. So, But we need to get that out of the way. But, you know, the problem with mesquite is if you leave one root down there, they'll sprout and come back. So you got to get them all. And it is a very labor-oriented task.
Sounds like an ongoing task.
It is. And, you know, they're trying to open up areas that used to be meadows and used to be open, and that'll help. When the antelope are fawning, they need about 2 feet of grass to hide those fawns in. And fawns don't smell. And so the coyotes will be coursing through there, kind of doing a grid, casting back and forth. And if it's all grass and there's good grass cover, then we have a lot better chance of fawn success.
The fawns go undetected.
Yes, they do. And then about 2 weeks, they can get up and run just about as fast as mama does. It's just, boy, God's creation is a wonderful thing.
Well, when you study that antelope a little bit, it's built specifically for speed. Its bone structure isn't a solid bone. It's like a honeycomb for shock-absorbing purposes. And when they run, their tongue falls out and forward of their mouth, so the air just, they don't even have to breathe. The air just drops in their throat.
It's a scoop, isn't it?
It's a scoop. It's like a pelican.
We got that on our hot rods just from the antelope, I think.
Man. Yeah, absolutely, incredibly, specially adapted animal, and just one of the most beautiful animals that you can see in the Arizona wilds. Now, I have a question for you. Is that antelope that you're working on there, is that the Sonoran antelope?
Nope, these are the American antelope.
The Sonoran are farther to the west over...
And they are. They're 15-20% smaller. They're unique subspecies, and they're from Ajo, all the way back to Yuma, on down into Old Mexico.
Okay. All right. Well, it's great seeing all that grassland recovered. Jennifer and I actually do visit Sonoyta quite often, take the horses down there and spend a weekend riding around Canela Pass, and just some beautiful, beautiful areas down there.
It is. You know, we were quail hunting this last December and January down there, and every once in a while, you have to stop and take a breath if you're an old guy like me. And you get to the top, and those vistas are so splendid. You have to absorb it and take a minute to just rest and say, wow, what country.
Oh, talking about the southeast corner of Arizona, in particular, Cochise County, which is what our county feature of the month is here at Rosie on the House. We're here with Jim Paxson, the special assistant to the director of the Arizona Game and Fish Department. If you'd like to visit with him, give him a call at 1-888-767-4348. I can't think of the southeastern part of the state without thinking of a very unique animal that flies in every January, that sandhill crane.
Boy, we really are seeing a production with the sandhill cranes. They're so musical, not just noisy, they're musical, and they're so huge, and they come all at once and leave all at once. You know, we see them in December, then along about March, sometimes early April, they're all gone. They go north to their places where they nest and have their young.
But where do they summer?
Well, sometimes all the way up into Canada and even into Alaska, up into the Arctic Circle.
Okay. So a pretty big flight pattern.
Yeah, but with wings like that, you know, and if you've ever watched them fly in formation, the bird in the front's taking all the wind, and everybody else is kind of sheltered. And so every once in a while, that bird in the front will rotate out, and another one will go in and take the lead. They're a very community-oriented bird. They fly in groups, in arrows, and they're just another piece of creation that's just splendid to watch. We had a crane cam this year for the first time.
Yes, you did.
And
that was a noisy little cam. I tried to put it on in my office computer, but it was so noisy I got complaints from my neighbor in the cubicle.
They are a very talkative bird.
Kind of like a little clacky sound. Clack, 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 clack. Very peculiar. Now, from my Cajun uncle, I'm going to give you a wildlife test here. When they fly in formation like that, the geese, the cranes, do you know why one leg of the V is always longer than the other? They're never a perfect V. Have you noticed that? There's always...
Jennifer, is this a Cajun tale here?
You won't know to the end.
Go ahead, Rosie. No, I don't know.
Well, it's because the one with the longer leg has more birds in it. The longer leg of the V has more birds in it.
You know, I've tried flying and keeping up, but I can't. I need a better plane.
Now, how about, how about that guy that followed the geese in his little aerolite, followed them for a whole season?
Weren't they following him?
I think it got that way. That's right. Yeah, that's some incredible video footage of him at eye level going with those geese.
I love that.
I don't know what you have to, Mike, do you know, what do you YouTube to watch that? Maybe you can explore that a little bit. See if you can find it on your computers. It's really pretty incredible video.
Was that this year?
Awesome. No,
oh,
this
no,
was,
he's done it for like 10 years.
Oh, yeah. I missed it.
Yeah.
And he's in an ultralight with a camera, and he's literally flying next to the geese and follows them from their wintering grounds all the way down to the Gulf Coast.
Well, I'm going to write him and ask him to follow the hummingbirds and then the monarchs. There'd be some interesting things to watch way up in the sky.
Well, last time we had Jim on, we talked about the hummingbirds and the
fishermen
in the Gulf hanging feeders
off the
boat.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, how does a little bird like that cross from the Yucatan to Brownsville, Texas?
Well, you know, they only weigh like 2 grams. So they'll gorge themselves up to 3.5-4 grams so that they have the energy to make the flight. But they'll fly 500 miles from the Sea of Cortez across the Gulf to land. So without those fishermen putting feeders on their masts, then a lot of them fall into the ocean. And so it's been a great boon. That's a conservation success that people just don't have any idea that that's happening.
That's the kind of things that should make the news.
It should.
Yeah,
the good news, right?
Good
some
news.
Good news. That's we're hungry for some good news in this year of our campaigning. We're going to come back, and I want to talk about the Malpai Borderlands Group that's also working in that southeast corner of the state and what they're doing for the grasslands and for the wildlife and for the they're kind of a political, economic, conservation. They kind of wrap
government,
everything
non-government,
up.
Government, you bet.
A great interagency type group.
Cooperation at its best.
Malpai Borderlands Group. We'll come back and talk about that. And we'll talk about the letdown El Nino has been. You're talking about restoring the grasslands in that part of the state. And boy, if we don't get some green grass down there, we could be in some real danger. And who better to talk about fire dangers in Arizona than the man,
oh,
Jim Paxson. We'll be back right after this.